Well, now a cautionary tale about a new trend in the restaurant business, but actually more about the risks of the business in general. First, the trend. Every Thursday is secret pizza night in a nameless southern city, if you know where to go. A rundown neighborhood, a backyard fence, push the right panel, you emerge into a makeshift pizzeria with rickety tables, cocktails, a full-sized pizza oven, and now that word has gotten out, a line that snakes around the yard listening to brass or folk bands as they wait for a slice. It's part of the underground food movement, which is increasingly not so underground anymore. A restaurant might pop up in a New York subway car, complete with dinner linens in diners' laps. Some are illegal because you can't charge for food from an unlicensed, uninspected kitchen. But some are licensed and promoted to the public as cities grapple with ways to deal with pop-ups. All of them move around like whack-a-mole and depend on the trust of their clientele. And in addition to the food, they have a happening feel. Complete strangers chatting with each other as they sit in anticipation. Today we have a story of two chefs who were in the vanguard of pop-ups in Madison, Wisconsin from 2006 until 2009. Then brothers Johnny and Ben Hunter went legit with a critically acclaimed restaurant that, in a nod to their roots, they named Underground Kitchen. Now, we first spoke with them last month. Since then, let's just say there's been quite a plot twist. Let's start with our initial conversation. Johnny and Ben joined us from WHA in Madison, and we began by asking Ben, what exactly is a pop-up? Who puts them on? Who comes?
People go who are connected to people who are cooks, people who are servers, people who are foodies, or people who are just excited about the local food movement and the DIY movement in general. What it really takes is it takes ambitious individuals who want an outlet for expressing themselves in that way to take the chance and do it. And once they do it, they let people know. You find out by word of mouth, and that slowly grows.
You know, social networking, email listservs, Facebook, Twitter have all played a really strong role in kind of spreading the word about it.
Ben, describe some of the dinners that you might put together at one of these pop-ups.
I remember the second time we went to New York, we were coming out in the early spring, and because of a lot of our formative education with cooking happened here in Wisconsin in the deep winter, we thought we would bring that to New York, and we brought food that we had cut our teeth on, as well as a bunch of really exciting wild foraged produce that was harvested by a woman from New York that we met, Aya. She had the most phenomenal different types of bracken, fern, fiddleheads, and this Japanese wild asparagus, some ingredients that I had never had an opportunity to cook with. And that was the idea, is this was spring, this was forage. You don't know what you're going to get.
Oh, great. I can hear somebody saying, wow, no health inspector and foraged foods. You know, whoa, mushrooms, you know. But again, yeah. you had a relationship of trust with these people.
For us, the reason why we did that, the motivation for that dinner was to show people what we knew from where we were from and then learn something from them and do that. And we titled the dinner A Celebration of Spring. We also did a dinner focused on a breed of hogs called Red Wattles, where we raised them ourselves, we slaughtered them ourselves, we butchered them ourselves, and we served them ourselves. I mean, that talk about lack of regulation there. I mean, there's not a lot of people who would really be comfortable with that, but then there are a few people who demand that, and I think that is where you find the connection of individuals to these dinners.
The other trend we're hearing about is not just leaving restaurants and going to pop-ups, but doing food trucks.
That's even harder for the health inspectors to find.
A moving target. Oh, God, you guys.
Yeah. My brother and I, we've started our career working in a food cart together, and working out of those kind of carts is really like, it's sort of made us feel like we can cook sort of anything anywhere. We went to festivals together, and we would put on food for 20,000 people over 5 days, you know, and where we would just be slinging these stupid quesadillas with rice bean and corn relish and guacamole out. Like,
the thing about that is that that was a lot more unsafe than any pop-up restaurant.
Well, at least
festival
you're admitting
food?
It.
Yeah, festival food, you know, like it's highly unregulated. They're like, you know.
Do you know how many times the walk-in, really like the everything went down, like the walk-in, the freezers and the fridges and all that kind of stuff? Never eat at a festival.
Okay. Well, do I understand that even when you had your pop-ups at some point, they were on the front page of the newspaper, articles about them, and food inspectors still didn't know
would never bothered about the pop-up restaurants. There was some of the DIY butchering stuff. They were more concerned about.
And then there was also, we did this huge fundraiser, and these bikers biked from one place to the next place to the next place to the next place. And we popped up a little restaurant at each of those spots, and it's like an 80-mile route. And like, we had ice cream sandwiches at one. We had the lunch stop was like a grilled bacon with reduced balsamic and like roasted grilled eggplant and like a 7-bean salad and a mescaline salad. And we did like, you know, all different types of like punches and juices and granola bars and all these different bakeries and restaurants in town helped us out and helped us set up this. We served food for 600 bike riders, raised $80,000, and the health inspector calls me up and is giving me trouble because I didn't have a license. And I'm like, buddy, I'm not in your county when I'm doing this, so just leave me alone. I'm trying to do good here. And I've never hurt anybody, at least, you know, not physically, probably emotionally.
Okay.
We had a lot of real conflict with our health department here, and it was a game of cat and mouse for a while. They would call us up, and we would define ourselves as contract cooks, and then they would come at us saying that we were something else, and we were figuring out how to identify ourselves. We came up with ways to, like, skitter by the rules, but eventually the city here, at least, has offered different opportunities for temporary licensing and for people to be able to do this sort of thing without going directly in the face of the codes.
It's kind of like, if you can't beat them, join them.
I do feel like there was a certain sense of exasperation with the health department officials here.
Well, explain to us what the rules are, though. I mean, why would a pop-up restaurant be different from, say, a caterer?
A caterer is given more leeway because they're able to operate off-site.
And the reason they can do that is because they have a base kitchen, and they have a place where they can guarantee that producing things in a safe manner. And these pop-up restaurants don't have that.
And some of the pop-ups, I mean, some that I've been to, are in places it's sort of, you're not even sure you want to sit down, much less eat. Do you worry?
We tried to find spaces that were unique and had a source of inspiration themselves. We did it on a rooftop in Brooklyn one time. We've gone out to the farms. We did one at a community center here in Madison.
The one in Brooklyn, was that one that you sold out 500 tickets at, I think it was $85?
We did a series of dinners in Brooklyn, and three of them, and we sold about 500 tickets total and $85 a piece.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it was fun. Like, we brought our whole crew out to New York City and, like, worked really, really hard to, like, get these meals for two seatings of 40 at each night. And we got those out of these tiny kitchen apartments, oftentimes having, you know, carried, like, coolers full of meat and produce from Wisconsin on the plane, having to repack different cuts of beef from one suitcase because it was too heavy into multiple different packages, and figuring out how to, like, bring something that is unique that we are doing to this different city.
Johnny and Ben Hunter, they were in the vanguard of the pop-up movement. One-shot meals all over Madison, but also in Manhattan. We first spoke to them a couple months ago. They'd moved from the pop-up scene to their first brick-and-mortar restaurant named Underground Kitchen, a nod to their roots. And they were still defending the underground movement despite questions about safety. For instance, health inspectors recently sent a cease and desist letter to a San Francisco underground night market. So a lot of questions about pop-up markets. Johnny Hunter has a master's degree in public affairs food safety, but as we said, he's also a pop-up proponent. So I asked him what he thought about regulations.
I'm a big fan of regulation. You know, the restaurant industry is probably underregulated as it is. You really only see your inspector once a year. And even if you call and complain about a restaurant, you know, the inspector might not show up. They're overworked and they don't really have enough time to deal with all the spaces they do it. And so the pop-up restaurant, for the most part, it's a really safe endeavor, you know. The food is really fresh. It's coming from sources that people know. They're holding and serving the food in a very short amount of time, whereas a restaurant could hold food for two weeks. You won't see that at a pop-up restaurant. And I think that's where a lot of the concern would come from.
I think there's a much different sort of assumed risk when you go to a pop-up restaurant and when you go to a restaurant that is established. I think that people do it based off of connections and personal network or a social network, and they are going into that relationship with a bit of a trust, and they're taking a little bit of a larger risk. But I also feel like it's less of a risk because it's more of a known issue. It's not like this restaurant is operating for weeks and weeks on end and with no idea of what's happening to their scraps and their waste and all of that stuff. Is it going back onto plates? This place, you know, is going to get up, it's going to serve, it's going to serve the best food, and it's going to be done.
Johnny, you propose new regulations.
Well, I think if people are going to be doing pop-up dinners maybe a couple times a year, there should be a space for that in the regulatory body. And I think that one thing that would be helpful with that is maybe a class that someone could go to and learn some of the basic food safety regulation. A lot of it's common sense, but there are some things that having more knowledge about can prevent foodborne illness. So that would be something within the system that would allow for these pop-up restaurants to happen without burdening them too much with the kind of cost of opening a restaurant.
Right. Well, now you have opened a brick-and-mortar restaurant with all the cost and responsibility. Do you miss those days of deciding to pop up somewhere and have a meal? Now you've got rent and, I'm sure, licensing and stuff that goes along with running a restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, there was a certain kind of creative energy. There was a lot of excitement, and there was a lot of just doing things very much in the moment and it being done. And that isn't part of our life anymore. I do miss that, but the amount of backbreaking work kind of got to us in the end, and it was just so much work at so much, and we wanted to make this a career, and we decided that opening a restaurant was a way to do that. Everyone's really happy about it, but, you know, I still miss some of the raw energy that was there.
And maybe even more so now. That was our conversation last month with Johnny and Ben Hunter, pop-up restaurateurs turned owners of the brick-and-mortar underground kitchen in Madison, Wisconsin. After we spoke, their story became even more of a cautionary tale. We reached Johnny Hunter on the phone. Johnny, what happened to Underground Kitchen?
There was a fire early in the morning on June 30th, and the building is pretty much destroyed at this point. So we're closed indefinitely. I mean, we haven't even been able to be in the space yet.
First of all, we're so sorry, you know, given that you put so much blood, sweat, and tears into this. And when I first heard, you know, remembering some of the things you'd said about, inspections, you know, especially in your early days, you had sort of a laissez-faire attitude towards food inspectors and things like that. And I was thinking, I wonder if it was a grease fire.
No, I mean, we had no open flames in our kitchen or anything like that, so we don't have any idea where the fire started or what happened.
Yeah. So how are you functioning?
Right now, we're not really functioning. We do have a catering company and a meat processing company and an offsite facility, which makes us kind of lucky, but kind of immediately, I started getting like a kind of an outpouring of offers to use other restaurants to run Underground Kitchen as we figure things out. So,
well, wait a minute. That means you've sort of come full circle. So other restaurants are going to allow you to pop up in their restaurant?
Yeah. I could probably run a full-time restaurant in other restaurants right now, at least for a few months from mm-hmm. all the offers I've had. So that part of it seems kind of exciting to me, you know.
And I guess just what do you, you know, some would say, you know, this is another cautionary tale about just how tough the restaurant business can be. How are you taking this in?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, at the point when things were going really well and, you know, we'd gotten over that kind of massive amount of work that it is to go into a restaurant, and we were kind of getting firm legs under us. Everything got yanked away so quickly, and you know, I've told my partner, it was always like, we're almost there, you know, we're almost there. Like, all the hard work you've done, like, supporting me all these years, we're almost there. And then now it's like, oh, man, what do we do now?
Well, and I'm thinking, too, again, you were such a big part of the whole pop-up movement. I'm thinking that young people who have been watching your trajectory might be saying, man, the heck with getting a building. It might burn down. I'm sticking with pop-up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain amount of kind of investment of work, time, and money that, you know, the pop-up allows you out not have to put in. And that's why I think we'll be able to do the pop-up so quickly.
Right. And we should say that even though you colored outside the lines a lot, you did have insurance.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you know, kind of the beginning roots of the organization have moved into very legitimate sides. And, you know, the pop-up things we're going to do now are going to be at restaurants. And, you know, we'll be working with the health department, you know. Yeah. Just, I don't have the energy to try to go underground again.
Oh, who can blame you? Johnny Hunter, again, the restaurant he had was called Underground Kitchen, a nod to his underground life as a pop-up restaurateur. And now he's back to pop up as his fortunes have changed and the building the restaurant was in burned. Best of luck to you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Robin.